Welcome to We Speak program. I'm so excited because this isn't just any podcast series. This is We Speak, where we empower and inform, produced by Trailblazing We Lead program. We are here to amplify the voices and strengthen the influence of young women whose sexual and reproductive health and rights are often overlooked. Our focus: young women and adolescent girls living with HIV, facing vulnerability and discrimination, living with disabilities and those affected by displacement. I'm Deborah Letua, your host for the second episode, The Power of Collective Care. Karibu, bienvenue, bienvenidas, bienvenido, and welcome to the conversation. Over the next 25 minutes, we'll hear powerful insights from feminist leaders, activists, and wellness advocates discussing what collective care means in practice and how it has shaped their movements. You'll also hear clips from recent webinar on this very specific subject with inspiring voices who bring new perspective to the forefront. Let's start by exploring the concept of collective care. Collective care goes beyond individual self-care. It's about building systems of support within movements and organizations that prioritize the wellness of everyone involved. And now let's hear from activist Mercedes Alvarez, who will explain the invisible contribution women make through care work.
Care is a need of human and natural life. It is directly linked to vulnerability. Human means we have a very long period that we are dependent, and we cannot survive without others and without the care of others. And this is needed during all our lives. In some moments of our lives or in some conditions, we need specific care or more care, but all human beings and also our world and the nature needs care. Since care is needed, we have visions of development and visions of economy that don't recognize the importance of care. The productive sphere linked to the public is up. And this is what usually is recognized as work and part of economy. But there is an invisible part and an essential part of economy that it is usually not recognized and usually not paid or but paid. And it's all the work, the care work. We see here examples: domestic work, caring about children, about elderly, about sick people, usually in the shoulders and in the back of women who is very tired. And this distribution, gender distribution of work that put most of the reproductive or care work on women, we need a society that cares, societies and cultures of care, collective responsibility on care, and ethic of care. And this is something that has been reflecting and communicated but different feminist movements in the world. The redistribution of care is very important. It is important that everybody cares and also receive care. We need to recognize care as a right for women too, and recognize women as right holders. And when we talk about right holders, we also talk about duty bearers, starting with the state. And states have to be also accountable for the right of care that everybody needs, including women.
You know, Mercedes touches on something crucial. How care work, often invisible and gendered, supports not just families but entire movements. And yet, it's often the most overlooked aspect of activism. To better understand how collective care plays out in activism, let's turn to Nyambura Gadhumbi from We Lead program. She brings in the idea of shifting from self-care to collective care within feminist organizations.
The topic that we are looking at today is also informed by the framing of our linking and learning approach, which we said that is going to be both intentional and present. There are so many things that have been happening all in all the countries where we are working. And these things are related to the change in context, to the difficulties that we are experiencing, to human rights violations, to shrinking civic space, to conflict, and other issues that have made it very difficult to do our work and also have impacted a lot of us in terms of our wellness, mental wellness, and psychological well-being. In that sense, we can see that this is both emergent issue because we keep experiencing it in different ways and in different contexts. But also when I look at the intentional part of it, I look at our commitment as a program because we have already had a discussion about this and we agreed that we are going to center wellness and well-being in our programming so that we can support each other to be able to grow. We know that well-being, and particularly in the case of women and girls, is an important element of global commitments. We see it being mentioned a lot in policy documents, in frameworks, but then we don't see as being able to realize true well-being. So we are still struggling a lot with a lot of things, including the fact that we all don't have power to freely decide of our own bodies, of our sexual life, and so many other things. And if and when we want to exercise our reproductive rights and health. We also know that for feminist organizations and other organizations, wellness and well-being and collective care is not just a practice. It is now becoming an ethical imperative, and I've seen a lot of feminist organizations having that framing and taking a lot of action and concrete action to ensure that this is an issue that they are prioritizing. Feminists, which is something that we a lot of us identify as feminists, and align with feminist principles and values. And we know that from that perspective, we should be able to view self and collective care as a right and one that needs to be safeguarded and protected. We know that self-care, it started as a conversation around self-care, which means that it was mainly focused on the person, and the responsibility was placed on an individual to be able to take care of themselves. But through the years, we have seen that discussion growing, and now we are talking about collective care with the realization that sometimes self-care is almost impossible to achieve at an individual level. And therefore, collective care is more appropriate if we all work towards taking care of each other. So we have seen that this has been articulated a lot in the feminist spaces and in women's rights circles. But still, we haven't achieved a common approach. And this means that we need, again, to think about a cultural shift. Oftentimes, we lean towards self-care as opposed to collective care. We recognize that as we lead, we are guided by feminist principles and values, and we should all strive to embrace feminist practices, including collective care, as one of the things that we'd like to do. And we also need to foster cultures and practices that promote that.
Nyambura reminds us that collective care isn't just a practice. It's a necessity for survival in challenging political landscapes. How do we integrate that into our daily lives as activists? How do we create a culture of care within our organizations? In practice, collective care looks different depending on the context. And in the We Lead program, feminist organizations from across the globe share strategies on how they've embedded care into their work. And now let's listen to Salome Nduta, who is a Kenyan human rights defender, as she talks about simple but effective ways to incorporate care into activism.
Activists need to practice self-care. And how do you do this? It is simply doing things that maybe for some of us we love doing. There are people who love hiking, for example. There are people who love taking walks. There are people who love dancing. In short, there are things that we can do every day. And these ones might not require money. All they require is the individual will, but most importantly, creating time to practice them. There's the element of social wellness. And as activists, we do our activism individually, but also together with others. It is important that activists stop being heroes or ninjas, for lack of a better word, and work with others. Because when you work alone, the likelihood of being of experiencing burnout is high. So for activists, some of them have been practicing what you call buddy system, where you're working with others or one or two others within your activism work, but also the buddy becomes the person who knows when you are down, who knows when you're going through a phase, and they can actually come and pick you up. So it is important we work with others. We also have activists who have started what we call merry-go-round. And these are important when you want to lift each other financially, because when you're down financially, this is an area that can cause you trauma and make you interfere not just with the way you work on a daily basis or interfere with your family lifestyle, but also interfere with the way you relate with other people. So one way that activists have been able to deal with their financial strain is by joining groupings where they save little money. And during a rainy day, the little savings they've made, they can always recall it. A very important aspect of social wellness are the groups that we form on WhatsApp or on Signal. People tend to share information, including information on wellness and well-being. But people also share opportunities that might help each other to grow. So one of the skills or the practice that has really helped to deal with stressful moments of activism work is just doing a fight and making a decision that between this time or on this day, I am not going to escape on anything that involves a campaign that we are running. Not because I do not believe in the cause, but because I realize I need to rest, I need to recoup. I need to do a tactic session for myself and for the campaign just to make sure that I'm capable of being the campaign. And there's something Mercedes mentioned, being able to say no. That is part of work-life balance. Otherwise, if you become a yes person, you will find yourself always experiencing stress, because you're not able to say no either to your peers, your supervisors, or even your family members. As an activist, it is important for you to realize that you're dealing with different people. You're dealing with people who have different beliefs, and you can become a source of stress to yourself and to them, especially if you do not recognize that difference. So, if you are aware of certain biases that you hold and you're interacting with a particular group of persons and we do not believe in their cause, it's very important to step aside. So intersectionality of age, sexual orientation, religious practices, these are things that make us either to become more stressed or to stress others. So you need to be aware as an activist, when am I operating with my biases? When am I pushing my own agenda? And therefore, by pushing further, I might end up putting harm to myself because I'm going to meet with resistance.
And now Salome reminds us to incorporate small acts, just the way she has said it about hiking, you know, dancing of care into our daily lives is powerful. It can be as simple as taking a walk or connecting with others, but it's these practices that sustain us in the long run. Take a moment to think about your own practice of self-care. What are some ways you've prioritized wellness into your life? And how can you expand that to support your community? In conflict zones, collective care is more critical. We now turn to Abir Shamimi, who works in the Middle East, where collective and transgressional trauma is widespread. She highlights how her organization has responded to these challenges through collective care.
The idea of investing in the resilience fund provided by HIVOS efficiently derived from the idea that ANHUR and the COAS organizations in Jordan are working with multi-rights holders groups with different needs and situations. They are working on a sensitive issue and complicated context, which implies the necessity to undertake activities geared towards team building and general wellness. So this approach comes from the notion of that the maintenance of NGO workers' well-being is important in order to improve what these institutions contribute to society. Following the assessment, we conducted two workshops on wellness in workplaces and self-care for the COA organizations, including the COA staff and the volunteers of rights holders. Those workshops emphasized the importance of psychological well-being, and a lot of topics were covered in the workshops, included self-care, burnout in workplaces, internal and external support resources, holistic self-care, controllable and uncontrollable factors that affect well-being, and cognitive triangle, developing individual self-care plan, life events, bells curve, tree metaphor, personal resilience. So all of these topics were discussed to enhance the well-being and wellness of the workers of civil society organizations, including the rights holders. During the workshops, we introduced the availability of one-on-one therapy sessions with a therapist to support COA staff and volunteers and rights holders. Actually, we consider that those one-on-one sessions are really useful in much-needed interventions, as we heard feedback from the rights holders and from the COA staff. In October 2023, we have witnessed a escalation in the context in the MENA region, and it actually affected our work and our wellness here in Jordan as Jordanian population. Especially after the ongoing aggression on Gaza, it created a heightened context leading to intergenerational trauma and secondhand trauma among the Jordanian. We responded to this escalation in context by organizing responsive art therapy workshop to release tension and reduce anxiety among COA organizations. In this workshop, we collaborated with professional art therapists, and the workshop utilized the expressive art and covered various topics like trauma, emotional awareness, relaxation, and stress reduction. So, looking ahead to 2024, we plan to adopt a more proactive approach with the COA organizations to integrate wellness and well-being more actively and from the early designs of our interventions. Our focus will be on equipping COA members with tools and mechanisms to cope better with adversity and trauma. We aim to enhance their resilience and overall wellness through targeted initiatives, specifically through adopting the trauma-informed approach.
And now Abir's experience shows how collective care can be adapted to help communities in extreme circumstances. By providing creative outlets like art therapy and prioritizing mental health, we can build stronger, more resilient movements. As we come to the end of today's episode, it's clear that collective care is not just a feminist principle, but a necessary tool for survival in activism. Whether it's through body systems, wellness workshops, or creating time for rest, we must continue to care in our work. I hope today's discussion inspires you to think more deeply about how you care for yourself and your community. Feminist activism is about creating a world where everyone can thrive, and that begins with how we care for one another. Thank you for tuning in to this episode brought to you by the We Lead program in collaborations with Kelele Studios. For more details about the program, visit www.hivos.org. A special shout out to our amazing contributors, Mercedes Alvarez, Nyambura Gadumbi, Salome Nduta, and Abir Tamimi. Until then, keep leading and inspiring.